Good afternoon. Let's go ahead and get started. This is a meeting of the Title Setting Board pursuant to Article 40 of Title I, Colorado Revised Statutes. The date is March 3rd, 2010. The time is 1:35 p.m. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Blue Spruce Conference Room, 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. The Title Setting Board today consists of the following. My name is Bill Hobbs. I'm Deputy Secretary of State, and I'm here on behalf of Secretary of State Bert Bush. To my immediate right is Dan Domenico, Solicitor General, who is here on behalf of Attorney General John Southers. To my immediate left is Dan Carton, Deputy Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, who is the designee of the Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, Charlie Pike. To my far left is Maury Kanizer, Deputy Attorney General, who represents the Title Setting Board. To my far right is Ceci Gomez of the Secretary of State's office. Just a few words about procedures before we begin our agenda. There are sign-up sheets on the table by the door for anybody who wishes to testify. Our hearing is broadcast over the Internet and is recorded, and an archive of the recording will be on the Secretary of State's website. Whenever the Title Board considers new measures as it is doing today, there's three basic steps that the Title Board goes through. First, Title Board members may wish to ask questions of the proponents. This is important to ensure that the Title Board members understand each proposal. So I'll first give an opportunity for the Title Board members to ask questions of the proponents. Second, the Board will determine if it has jurisdiction to set a title, and that requires us, at the very least, to determine if each proposal comprises a single subject. That's a constitutional requirement that each measure be limited to a single subject. So that's our second inquiry. Third, if the Board determines that it does have jurisdiction to set a title, then we'll proceed to work on a title for each measure. Typically, we start with a staff-prepared draft, that a copy of which is on the table for each of the measures today. A copy is on the table by the back door. Generally, we take testimony first, and when testimony has been completed, there's a board discussion. A decision is reached by two of the three members of the board, and anyone who is dissatisfied with the decision of the Title Board today may file a motion for rehearing with the Secretary of State's office within 7 calendar days. We are, of course, not concerned with the merits of a proposal, but only with the setting of fair and proper titles. So with that, I'll turn to the agenda. The first item is 2009-2010, number 40, healthcare choice. If we could have a representative of the proponents come forward, identify yourself for the record, if you could, please. And if you have any opening statements, that's fine. Otherwise, I'll just go straight to questions.
Good evening, or good afternoon. John Caldera, the proponent of this initiative. Let's get right to it.
Any questions for Mr. Caldera?
Go ahead.
How would you describe this single subject, Mr. Caldera?
Quite simply, I know that your memory is perfect, but I'll remind you anyway, that 2 years ago, a similar proposal, almost verbatim to this, was brought forward and was given single subject and title from this board. It did exactly the same thing. Same argument applies. This is a single subject because it deals with the right of people in Colorado to have health care choice.
And I appreciate you pointing that out. I had not recalled that there was a similar proposal. And how does this differ from the previous proposal?
The previous proposal did exactly what this one does, although we kept in the ability for Coloradans to purchase health care insurance across state lines from any state where it was legal to buy insurance in that state. This one is basically the same, except it does not have that option in it. So 2 years ago, it required that that there can't be any statute or regulation requiring a person to participate in any public or private health care insurance plan, and also it allowed for direct payment of health care, legal health care options. So, and then 2 years ago was the same, those two items plus purchasing across state lines. So, I know consistent, past rulings from the board don't always mean consistency this time around, but I think it's worth noting.
Thank you. Further questions for Mr. Caldera? Mr. Domenico.
Do you intend to affect any existing laws through this, or is this sort of preemptive?
This is much more preemptive.
Any other questions? Then let's turn to the question of whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement. And Mr. Caldera, I don't recall, actually, how did you describe the single subject of the measure? The subject of the measure, you know, that's something we have to express right in the title. So
this is a single subject. It adds to Colorado's Bill of Rights a right to health care choice. That is to make sure that Coloradans have the choices to go into a health care plan if they choose to, or not to go into a health care plan if they choose to pay directly for health care services or not to if they choose to. So the single subject is that of the right of people to have health care choices.
Okay, thank you. Let me see if there's anybody who wishes to oppose the measure on single subject grounds. I don't have anyone signed up to testify, but is there anyone present who wishes to argue on the single subject issue? Mr. Gruskin.
Disappointed if you weren't here.
I'd like not to disappoint you. My name is Mark Gruskin, and I have three jurisdictional issues that I'd like to raise with the board. And if it's all right with you, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to raise them all as opposed to just the single subject issue.
Sure, go ahead.
To begin, I'd like to pass out a document, a public document from the Office of Legislative Legal Services.
Thanks.
This is the review and comment memo, as I'm sure you know. And as you also know, the proponents are required to limit their changes to those issues raised by this part of the process. I did not bring copies of the redline version of this measure. However, if you are looking at the text in the packet, I can tell you, I won't go through everything that was added, but I will can tell you exactly what additions were made that it is believed were not addressed in this earlier process. First, under paragraph 1 in the second line, the word contract was added to the litany of statute, regulation, resolution, and policy. Secondly, under subparagraph A, the words directly or indirectly were added to the language that you see there. Third, under subparagraph B, the words or ability were added. And fourth, subsection 2, the exclusions, changed emergency services to emergency medical treatment, and health practitioners was changed to health care providers. Now, in my reading of the document that I've handed to you, the January 26th review and comment memo, there is no discussion of the issue in paragraph 1 of expanding beyond promulgated policies to the issues of contracts. There is no discussion of expanding subparagraph A significantly by the use of the reference directly or indirectly. There is no discussion of the need to change in subparagraph B right to include ability, and there is no discussion of any of the changes in subparagraph 2. These are significant changes, obviously. The first change altered the nature of what this measure does in that, as opposed to a matter of legislative or regulatory policy, it is now a matter of contracting, which does not require, obviously, any sort of public process. And the other changes are also significant, obviously expanding the scope to whom subparagraph A applies, and changing not just the nature of subparagraph B to talk about rights, but to talk about capacity, ability, right? As to the relevance of the changes to subparagraph 2, they're not immediately evident to me, but they're certainly not indicated by the memo that you have. And so it seems, before you even get to the issue of single subject, that there is a significant question of whether or not the board has jurisdiction. If you'd like, I can go through all my jurisdictional issues, or back away as you.
I think that'd be my preference, but let me ask the board members if they have any questions on that particular jurisdictional issue. I mean, basically, you're saying these are substantive changes. They were not that they're not in response to comments of the directors, as far as you can tell. And certainly, I'll give Mr. Caldera an opportunity to respond. But
right.
I think we understand that issue. If you want to move on to the others, then.
My second jurisdictional point is that this doesn't have a single subject. It has at least four different subjects. As Mr. Caldera acknowledged, the point of this is to preempt federal law, presumably upcoming federal health care legislation. The second purpose of this measure, found in subparagraph 2, is to expand the authorized health care services to those that are not permitted or prohibited by any law. This measure is originally drafted, as Mr. Caldera pointed out, had an add-on to subparagraph 1 that allowed people to have insurance coverage by companies that were not licensed to do business in the state of Colorado. Therefore, they were doing business under other laws, presumably compliant in those states. The language, in subparagraph 3, the definition of lawful health care services was a companion piece to that because it authorized any service or treatment permitted or not prohibited by any provision of law. It was not limited in the original draft to Colorado law, and it is not limited here to Colorado law. And therefore, treatments that are permitted in other states but not permitted under Colorado law would now become part of the permissible scope of health care in this state. Let me give you two or three examples of when that has occurred. In the 70s, a proposed treatment for certain types of cancer was Laetrile. Laetrile was a derivative of basically peach pits. In Florida in 1977, it was legalized, but it wasn't legal in Colorado for at least a couple more years. And so there was a period during which a treatment was not prohibited in Florida, but it was prohibited in Colorado, and then the law changed. In 1996, the state of California authorized medical marijuana, but voters of Colorado didn't authorize medical marijuana till the year 2000, and it didn't become effective till 2001. Currently in the state of Oregon, physicians are authorized to assist their patients who are terminally ill with the appropriate medical procedures to commit suicide. That is not legal in the state of Colorado. However, under this measure, it would be, because it is permitted or not prohibited by any provision of law. This may have been an oversight on the part of the proponents once they took out their companion piece. Perhaps not. I don't presume to testify about their intent, but it is clear that that is the effect of this measure. The third subject is that, and it is clear under paragraph 1A, that it limits health insurance coverage. There are certain people who might want a public option, a government-mandated option. They cannot have it under this measure. And therefore, that is a purpose of this measure. And fourth, under subparagraph 1B, it revises the compensation system for health care payment. Those virtually have nothing to do with health care choice. I would suggest to you, in fact, and we can talk about it if you actually do decide to set a title, but health care choice is a misnomer, since there are, A, it's not clear that this actually does deal with health care as much as it deals with payment options, insurance plans, and the like. And secondly, that this measure doesn't really expand or guarantee a right to health care choice, but contracts available choices as to certain elements in the medical system. So it is our view, my view, that there are at least four subjects here, and that it would be violative of Article 5, Section 1, Paragraph 5.5 to set a title. I have a third issue, which is also jurisdictional in nature, if there are no questions about single subject.
Any questions on this particular issue? Could you, Mr. Griskin, would you explain that fourth subject to me again? You're referencing 1B, and you indicate you believe that it revises the compensation system, but I'm not sure I fully understood how it does.
Well, it clearly imposes a restriction in terms of the payment system for lawful health care services, because it would be impossible for the state to any longer deny, restrict, or penalize direct payments. Currently, presumably, that change is necessary only because currently it is permissible to deny, restrict, or penalize the ability to make or receive direct payments. And so that is a companion piece to the insurance health care plan in the earlier subparagraph.
Not sure I follow, but I don't want to belabor the point. But I mean, I can, you know, I can directly pay for my health care services now.
Right.
And this is, if this is about health care choice, this measure would preserve my right to do that. But I think you're saying it does more than that with respect to compensation system.
Well, what it does, I mean, obviously there's the potential for. There are plenty of people that don't make direct payments, and to the extent that it would be a legislative choice to deny the direct payment system, this prohibits it. It is unrelated as a function of the law. It is not necessarily indicated by subparagraph A.
I think we can agree that this would limit legislative choice when it comes to health care, but that's the whole point, right, is to limit the choices available to the government but preserve choices available to the individuals.
Well, if I guess the assumption is that if government provides a certain health care system, that isn't reflective of the choice of individuals, that certain individuals don't want that kind of an option.
If the government is forbidden from forbidding me from choosing to pay directly, that's not a limit on any individual's choice. I mean, it's a limit on if I want to convince the government to require everybody to play by one set of rules. That's one thing. I guess it does limit my choice of how I can get my government to act. But that's the whole point of a constitutional provision, right, is to limit the government's choices. So that one, some of your other points, I think, deserve some response from the proponents, but that one, I'm with Mr. Hobbs. I don't quite understand how saying the government can't limit individual choice is somehow a separate subject when that's the heart of the measure.
Well, it may be the heart of the measure, but in contrast to some of these other provisions, it's unrelated to them in terms of expanding the healthcare boundaries of the state of Colorado. My point is only that there are a number of different issues addressed here.
Fair enough.
Why don't you go on to then to your third issue?
The third jurisdictional issue I would acknowledge is one that hasn't been addressed by this title board or the Supreme Court directly. So here we go. So paragraph one states basically that no provision or contract by the state of Colorado, let me just read it, no statute, regulation, resolution, contract, or policy adopted or enforced by the state of Colorado, its departments and agencies independently or at the instance of the United States. The point of this, as Mr. Caldera already candidly pointed out, is to preempt any sort of federal statute. And there are limits on this board's authority. We all know certain of them, and I just talked about two jurisdictional limits. But similarly, there are limits in terms of the substance of what you can address. For instance, matters that are not capable of being addressed by the right of initiative, like administrative matters, could not be set for a title by this board. I would suggest to you that Article 6, Section 2 of the United States Constitution, which contains the Supremacy Clause, makes it very clear that states cannot simply presume that they are no longer part of the United States. And that's what this does. This states that there is no federal health care law that can be enforced by the state of Colorado or implemented by the state of Colorado or in any way used by the state of Colorado if it meets these certain conditions. I would suggest to you that the state of Colorado doesn't have the right to secede for purposes of health care legislation from the United States, not under Article 6, Section 2. And actually, Colorado Supreme Court would, while it hasn't addressed this exact issue, has quite a few years ago decided that where provisions are contrary to the U.S. Constitution, they cannot be considered for purposes of an initiative or referendum. And in that instance, it had to deal with the legislative act of approving an amendment to the U.S. Constitution. The court said, can't go there. You can't have that right to opt out of the constitutional system of approval. I would suggest to you that many measures that come to you, I'm sure I know, I've heard the claims made, you can't do this, or you have to have the title reflect that it conflicts with federal law. Well, those were all surmise and conjecture, and this board and the Supreme Court accurately say, let's see if it passes, and then we'll see whether or not there's an issue. But this initiative, in light of what the proponent says and in light of what the language says, there are no bones about it. This is all about not having Colorado attend to federal law. And frankly, Colorado just doesn't have that choice. And so I would suggest to you that you lack the jurisdiction to set a title if the voters cannot constitutionally achieve this objective. I know that this is not an argument that you've heard before, and I understand that it may not be one that you are particularly warm to, and I accept that, but I think it is borne out by Colorado case law, the decision of Pryor versus Nolan.
Can I interrupt you? Is that actually a decision that says that the title board doesn't have jurisdiction to set a title, or it's simply that the court wouldn't enforce an initiative? I'm not familiar with the case.
Fair enough. And it wasn't about the title board. What it said was this was a matter that couldn't even be presented to the voters. So it really wasn't even about title setting, in fairness. But if it can't be presented to the voters, like a single subject matter initiative can't be presented to the voters, it seems to me that you should treat them one like the other.
Are you sure you want us to start deciding the merits of whether a measure is enforceable?
I think this is such a narrow issue that you are at no risk in doing so. And I say so because I am aware of no other initiative that has been brought to you by its express terms to take Colorado out of a system of federal legislation. That is the only issue that I'm asking you to resolve this on. I don't want you, and don't think that you probably want to, interpret every initiative in this regard. But where an initiative says it basically preempts federal law in a way that every lawyer in this room knows that it cannot, it seems to me you have a duty to pay heed to that language.
Well, I'm not quite sure I see what line you want us to draw other than this carving out this particular initiative. And what would be the standard we would apply to deciding, well, this one is really obvious that they... I mean, I presume that what the proponents would say is that it may be that under existing law, the 10th Amendment it has been ignored, and under existing law we may have difficulty, but part of the point of this is to try to get existing law changed, try to revive the 10th Amendment. I don't know, maybe, but why can't they try to do that? And I don't see where we would draw the line other than starting to demand briefing on the enforceability of all these provisions and figure out some sort of standard of when we would say, well, this one's too obviously not going to be enforceable, and this one's borderline.
I'd like to respond because I think it's very easy. Where an initiative, by its express terms, is inconsistent with the United States Constitution, expressly attempts to take itself out of the scheme of the United States Constitution, that you can decide not to set a title. That is, as I said, it's a. What I'm not at, there are plenty of proponents who come to you and shrug and say, I don't know, or we'll let the courts determine it. But in terms of what the standard is, it's a very narrow standard.
The measure itself doesn't say we intend to take ourselves out of the Constitution. It says this is intended to reflect the Constitution. In Section 4.
Well, it says it's intended to reflect and affirm the powers under the 10th Amendment.
Right, which is part of the Constitution.
I understand that.
But I'm just saying it's tempting, certainly, to take this power on ourselves, but I find the idea of drawing a line extremely problematic. And I don't, frankly, maybe more importantly, see that we have any power to do so. So I don't need to belabor it. I mean, that's just my point. I could be outvoted on that.
Well, I do have trouble. I think I'm in agreement with Mr. Domenico. I'm having trouble understanding how this case would be different from others where there's assertions that a measure may violate federal law or federal constitutional provisions. And I guess my question is, you know, how does the text of this measure do that? I mean, I think the words that are relevant here are at the instance of the United States. I mean, it's basically saying that Colorado cannot do certain things either on its own or at the instance of the United States. But that could include where the federal government offers an optional program that would be at the instance, and it is not attempting to assert authority to impose law on Colorado. In other words, it could be an optional federal program. And so if that language is susceptible to an interpretation that preserves its constitutionality, perhaps with some exceptions that may or may not arise in the future, then we're right into legal interpretation, and as Mr. Domenico says, making briefs on how this will play out over time. I mean, if on its face it was clearly in violation of the federal constitution, maybe I could see your point, but I just don't see how it is.
Can I respond?
Yes, please do.
If you only had the phrase "at the instance of the United States," I can see your argument. But that phrase qualifies the next two clauses, which deal with requiring certain types of programs and denying. There's no optional language in here. And I don't think that the proponents would suggest to you that their goal is to limit certain options. The whole point is to take mandated programs, and hence they use the words require and deny, restrict, or penalize, and make them beyond the limits of the state of Colorado to comply with. Mandated programs would no longer be able to be complied with under this sort of provision. So I, for my own purposes, don't have that same concern, because this is such a narrow instance of a specific provision that calls into question the Constitution of the United States because of mandates.
Well, I'm not sure I agree, but thank you. Are there any other questions for Mr. Domenico? Before I return to Mr. Caldera, is there anybody else present who wishes to testify on the issue of whether the board has jurisdiction to set a title? If not, then, Mr. Caldera, would you like to respond to Mr. Gruskin's arguments?
Always. As flattering as it might be, you are not the U.S. Supreme Court. If this is a issue that will need to be decided by a board with more authority than you. As I understand it, your charge is to decide whether or not this is single subject, and then to decide what the ballot title would look like. To say that this is all about exempting a federal option, I think it's worth remembering that we were here a couple of years ago with something very close to this, that you three were sitting on the board when that was given single subject. Purpose is to prevent government from putting on this mandate, not just the federal government. Remember, here in Colorado, there was a push, or those interested in putting something similar to what is in Massachusetts, or commonly referred to as Romney Care. So this protects Colorado individuals from either a federal mandate or even a state mandate. To say that this is all about a federal issue would simply not be the intent of that. I can go on to the other issues, but quite simply, the idea that this is somehow outside of the U.S. Constitution, no, this is intended to be completely within the United States Constitution, thus the reference to the 10th Amendment. I'd like me to go on to other issues I may have.
Please
to.
Do. Yeah.
As far as Mark's first point that these are substantive changes, no, they're not. You know, it has become, for me, something very worthwhile to have that conversation with legislative counsel when they bring up very worthwhile questions and sometimes some silly questions. After listening to those questions and that input, it was our goal to try to best make the wording in this initiative work seamlessly as best we could with standing Colorado law and verbiage in state statute. So that's why there's many changes in there. The idea that this is somehow, you know, the scare tactic of this is restricting choice is laughable. This is not about restricting choice. This is about preserving choice. This is a limit not on insurance contracts between you and any insurance company. This is not a restriction between you and any other private party that either provides health care services or health care coverage. This is a to make sure that government doesn't restrict your choices. You may enter into whatever contracts you wish with insurance companies and providers for payment, direct or indirect. That's simply ridiculous thought that this is, this somehow is a restriction that turns the world upside down. That the purpose of removing the piece on outside, out-of-state purchasing of insurance, somehow that removing that, quote, companion piece somehow changes this is ridiculous. After discussions with the Legislative Council and internally, we thought it would be a cleaner initiative by removing that element of out-of-state purchasing. That's all. Quite simply, if 2 years ago something that had even more, quote, options on it was a single subject, then this must even be more of a single subject. And I see no reason why we cannot proceed.
Questions for Mr. Caldera? There's one. I do have a couple. Of the arguments advanced by Mr. Gruskin, there's at least a couple that seem pretty strong, and one of them has to do with the insertion of the word contract. And he indicated that this was added to the word contract was added in subsection 1 after the review and comment hearing. And it does seem like it's possible this significantly and substantively changes the meaning of the measure. And I don't know whether it does or not. I mean, you know.
No, it doesn't. This is not intended to make any sort of private contract. That's not this. This is a regulation, or this is a, as with everything else in the Bill of Rights in our state constitution, this is a restriction on government. This is not a restriction on private interactions. The government also regulates people's choices by state statute, by regulation, by resolution, by contracts that it might have with itself and other governments, and policies. These are things that are these are government issues, not private issues.
Well, and I appreciate that that's the intent, but if I were one of the directors and commenting on the proposal, I would ask, does the measure as now amended mean that any contract enforced by the state of Colorado is now subject to this measure? In other words, the language now says no contract enforced by the state of Colorado shall do these things. And that seems to me that possibly could apply to private contracts contrary to your intent. And that's one of the purposes of the review and comment hearing, is to determine if the language used in fact achieves your intent. And since the state courts enforce contracts, it seems like there's a reading of that goes beyond your intent.
I understand the point. I would have a hard time believing that it could be read that way, only because as part of the Bill of Rights, and that we're private entities don't have the right of statute or regulation or policy. This is clearly directed towards government.
So what, I think I agree with you that that's the more natural reading in context, but what is it? What contracts would the state adopt that would apply to?
It could be intergovernmental compacts. It could be a contract with the federal government. It could be contracts of agreement. The state is involved with many.
So it doesn't even, it's not your intent even to cover things like an employment contract or something between a state entity and its employees? I see.
This is meant as anything that, and you know, here in Colorado where we have so many different governments, there are governments that do business with each other through contract, intergovernmental agreements, IGAs, and such forth.
Okay.
Mr. Carton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Caldera, under the statute, on the changes that can be made to the measure after it's gone through the review and comment process. It says, if any substantial amendment is made to the petition, other than an amendment in direct response to the comments of the directors of the Legislative Council and the Office of Legislative Legal Services, the amended petition shall be resubmitted to the directors for comment. And I note from at least my reading of the review and comment memo that it doesn't appear to me that any of the changes to the version of the measure that's before the board, insertion of the word contract, insertion of the phrase directly or indirectly, insertion of the orability in paragraph 1B, was made in response to any of the comments or questions in the memo or at the meeting. Is that a fair conclusion?
No, I don't think that is a fair conclusion. Remember, there's two different types of comments given by the Legislative Council, including substantive comments and technical comments. Much of those discussions on technical comments is to make the language better flow with what is commonly written in Colorado law. It's a very useful term. And while there's specific things, there's also larger things as far as trying to make this flow well with current law. That's why many of these changes were made. If you certainly want to, unlike the Supreme Court, you do have the authority to decide that this was out of the bounds of what Legislative Council did, but.
Well, I guess I'm just.
And also in the substantive comments of this, it talks about our intention to be amended by the Constitution. What's our intention? And I think what we did was to better lay out the intention of this proposal. So, in my mind, this was within what Legislative Council talked to me about.
To follow up on that, based on the statute, in your view, for example, the addition of the word contract in subsection 1, is that a substantial amendment?
I don't see that as a substantial amendment. No, not at all. In fact, when Legislative Council asked what do we mean by the term health benefit plan or system, health benefit plan, what does the term health care choice mean? And quite simply, those are the things that we tried to clarify with the minor changes we made to this.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Mr. Caldera, let me ask you about another issue raised by Mr. Gruskin. I'll probably botch the characterization of it a little bit, but when he talked about health care services authorized by other jurisdictions, I think his argument was it's unconnected with the intent of the measure to provide health care choice. This measure would also basically legalize health care services that may be legal in other jurisdictions, Florida, California, or whatever, because the state cannot restrict the right of individuals to choose those lawful health care services. How would you respond to that?
That's closer to science fiction than anything else. In paragraph 1, subsection B, we talk about payments for lawful health care services. This lawful health care services are decided by here in Colorado by state law and by federal law. So as any of those laws change, what can be legal and what is not legal, that changes with this. If acupuncture is no longer a legal health care service by the state of Colorado, then this does not protect your right to purchase acupuncture if that's no longer legal.
And so would it be a fair statement that in the definition of lawful health care services in subsection 3, where the definition says it means that it's any service or treatment permitted or not prohibited by any provision of law, you mean Colorado law?
I would say Colorado law and federal law.
You don't mean, you don't mean any provision of any law, you mean
Since it's a Colorado constitution.
Law that applies in Colorado.
Right. This is a Colorado constitution and provides to Colorado laws. The clarification there is to make it clear that this does not protect your choice to pay cash for illegal health care services. That's not the intent. And as those laws change on what is legal services, what's illegal services, as we've seen happen, that this law protects those legal services.
Any other questions for Mr. Caldera? Again, anybody else wish to testify on the issue of jurisdiction? Mr. Gruskin, any further response in light of Mr. Caldera's response?
I would only comment that the issue of the changes since the measure went through the review and comment hearing are more clearly now substantial than just based on the four corners of the paper. The fact is that Colorado, as point of the review and comment hearing, is in part to help the proponents. It's also to provide notice to the people of Colorado about what's coming down the pike. And when a provision expands the scope of a measure so substantially, as Mr. Caldera said, there's many, many, many state contracts dealing with this topic area. If they're enforced by rule of law in terms of the legislature, if they were to be enforced by the courts, if they were to be enforced by the Department of Public Health and Environment, all of those actions would be prohibited. The fact of the matter is that the voters needed to at least have a sign that that was coming, that that was what was at issue. It could have been discussed. Frankly, the nature of the contracts and the nature of the scope of the contractual relationship, which is being fleshed out here a little bit, but clearly not enough, would have been part of the public discourse. It wasn't. And we think that the natural course of things is resubmit, allow people to know that that is on the table, and we can come back here.
Thank you. Then I'll turn to discussion by the board on the question of whether the board has jurisdiction to set a title. I guess I'll start. I think the most problematic issue for me among those that were raised by Mr. Gruskin is the additions to the text after the review and comment hearing. And I've been sort of reviewing my notes about the case law on this issue, and the state Supreme Court has allowed situations where the measures have changed not in direct response to the comments of the directors, where the changes were mere clarifications and not substantive changes. But it does look like there are substantive changes here by expanding the measure to include contracts. I guess I'm also wondering about the effect of adding the words or ability in 1B. I have some questions about how that may change the meaning of the measure, and I'm having trouble seeing that that's a mere clarification.
Which one
was that? I'm sorry. 1B, the addition of the words or ability, deny, restrict, or penalize the right or ability. And that's, to me, probably of the arguments raised by Mr. Gruskin, it's those changes that appear to be substantive that do trouble me. That I think, and as Mr. Gruskin indicated, it's not the purpose of the review and comment hearing is twofold. It's to provide some input to the proponents to make sure that the language of their measure does carry out their intent. But there's also a public right to a hearing as well. The court has indicated that there's an overriding public purpose served by the presentation of comments and review in a public meeting. So these are things that might have been, I don't know that for sure that they would, but they might have been the subject of additional comments or questions from the legislative staff if they had been in the original measure. So I guess, at least from my perspective, those are the strongest arguments, and I'd have a little trouble finding at this point that the board has jurisdiction. Any other discussion? Mr. Carden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess kind of going in reverse order on Mr. Gruskin's objections, jurisdictional grounds. The third on the role of the title board to not set a title based on its determination that a measure clearly preempts federal law or is in conflict with the federal constitution. I'm with my fellow board members, I believe, on that, in that that's, as Mr. Domenico said, drawing that line is problematic. I appreciate the argument, but I'm not willing to take that step today. As far as the four different subjects that Mr. Gruskin set forth, I would conclude that those aren't separate and distinct enough to pose a single subject issue, at least on kind of one of my preliminary analysis. I tend to agree with Mr. Hobbs on the changes to the measure that have been made by the proponent since it was since it had its review and comment hearing. And the statute says what the statute says about substantial changes that are not made in response to comments. And so I guess the question becomes whether or not the changes that have been highlighted by Mr. Gruskin, responded to by Mr. Caldera, and that Mr. Hobbs talked about are substantial, or whether they are in the nature of those types of changes that the court has deemed permissible as far as the Supreme Court has deemed permissible as far as the title board having jurisdiction. I don't think that these changes were made in response to the questions, with all due respect to Mr. Caldera's testimony on and kind of the technical comments and aligning the language with current law. They seem to be new. One decision annotation I'm looking at without the benefit of reading the case is, while particular change was not made in direct response to the director's questions, the court concludes that in the context of the amendment as a whole, it was a clarification and not a substantive change. Accordingly, the change did not require resubmission to the directors. And as in Ray Ballot Title 1999-2000, number 256, 12P3rd 246. And so at this point, I guess I would be reluctant to conclude that the board has jurisdiction based on these changes, and that it may be in the proponent's best interest to resubmit and have the review and comment done with these changes to the measure. Thank you.
Further discussion, Mr. Domenico?
Yes, I'll take my turn. I agree that we shouldn't take up Mr. Gruskin's tempting invitation to start rejecting measures because we think that they're unconstitutional. I think he, frankly, hyperbolically accused this of effectively being a partial secession from the union. But I think, frankly, I see no jurisdiction for us, even if we saw a measure that simply said Colorado secedes from the union. I see no jurisdiction for us to say we're not setting a title for that. So that I think I can dismiss. The only single subject issue that got that I think is at all problematic and having worked through it, I think I'm okay with, is what Mr. Hobbs raised about what is meant by lawful health care services. I think we would need to think about it a little bit more if, in fact, this did what Mr. Gruskin suggested in legalizing in Colorado anything that's legal anywhere, but I think I'm convinced that that's not what it does. So I'm in agreement. I think that the real problem, if there is one, is with the changes that were made. To me, the only one that's at all rises to the level of substantial, which I think is the statutory limit or the statutory line we're supposed to try to draw, is the contract question. The others seem insubstantial to me. I mean, directly or indirectly, I don't think changes much, just clarifies that it's meant to be expansive. Right or ability, I don't see how that makes a substantial change. Contract, I'm sort of go back and forth on. I think Mr. Gruskin misrepresented somewhat what Mr. Caldera said about there being many intergovernmental contracts and agreements. I don't think he said there are many such agreements that actually would be affected by this. In other words, this only affects contracts that require people to participate in health insurance plans, et cetera, or penalize their right to make or receive direct payments. I have trouble picturing that actually a contract being able to do either of those things. So I'm not sure I see that contract in this context, if Mr. Caldera's interpretation is correct, actually affecting much of anything. On the other hand, it was inserted, and presumably for some reason. And given that, it might be good to work through in the review and comment what exactly was meant to be covered by that. So I think personally my view is that these are all insubstantial changes. I don't see contract as expanding what this covers very much. On the other hand, I'm not going to fight very hard, especially if I'm outvoted on that, because I do think something might be added to the process, at least by going back and discussing that a little more clearly.
And I would add to my comments that I agree with the other title board members. I don't see grounds for the title board to act on Mr. Gruskin's third issue. I think that's problematic. And second, I'd add that I don't think I see a single subject problem here either. I think I'm still most troubled by whether or not there's been adequate review and comment on the measure that's before us. So I think on that basis, maybe I'll just go ahead and offer a motion and see if there's support for it, that I would move that the board deny title setting on the grounds that it doesn't have jurisdiction under Section 140.105, subsection 2, which is the section that refers to the review and comment and changes that are in response to the comments of the director. So that would be my motion.
Second.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
That motion carries 2-1. So that then completes action on number 40. The time is 2:33 p.m. Okay. Is anyone present for the proponents on number 38, the next item on our agenda? If not, we may lay that one over, but we'll see.
It doesn't want to testify.
Go on to the next agenda item, 2009-2010, number 38, water use for new housing. the Secretary of State's office had gotten an email, I think, earlier today that from one of the proponents, Dan Hayes, that due to an emergency, he would probably not, he would not be able to be here, and I think he was looking for a replacement. So that's why I'm asking, is there anyone here to speak on behalf of proponents of number 38? I don't have anyone signed up to testify on number 38 at all. Then I think what I'd like to do is, unless there's objection, is to lay number 38 over. I think really I think the board has to be able to ask questions about a measure. I don't really want to act without the ability to make sure we understand the measure. So if there's no objection, I don't know that we need a motion, do we, Mr. Kneiser?
You can just lay it over for the next meeting.
If there's no objection, then let's just lay that one over until the next regularly scheduled meeting of the title board, which I believe is March 17th. I don't know the time yet, but the Secretary of State's office, of course, will provide notices. Okay. We don't have any other agenda items, so the time is 2:36 p.m., and we are adjourned. Thank you.